What else could happen with her? Evelyn went on having his fun. I'll bet dinner that Victor doesn't know about this call.
Will you help, Uncle?
Mayen has been declared Barleona's most wanted, and you know how I feel about outlaws.
Where and when?
A happy smile appeared on Stacy's face, and she held up a thumb.
Tomorrow at the tournament. It's too late today. I was going to exit. As for dinner, that wasn't a joke. Allie has been driving me crazy. She wants me to introduce her to the prettiest woman of Barleona.
Are you there on the islands?
Anastaria clarified.
Where else would a poor retiree spend his dying years, once everyone's given up on him?
The voice in the amulet sounded upset with the entire world.
I love you, Uncle.
Stacy sent an audible kiss and hung up the amulet, then looked at us with satisfaction.
It's quite rare that two pieces of the Dark Widow are in Barleona at once. Okay, Plinto, can we meet your fighters before the mission?
They'll be here tomorrow.
Stacy's excitement infected the rogue. He jumped to his feet and began to pace back and forth across the hall.
I have 20, but it's better to find 10 more. Stacy, do you have any candidates?
The two began discussing names that I'd never heard before, so I quickly grew bored. This wasn't my line, vetting people, discussing their strengths and weaknesses. That's what I have my wife for. She's already proved her competence in this issue by choosing me to begin with.
Listen up.
50 minutes later, we were again on the arena's yellow sand, and Plinto was again briefing me on the tactics, which I had already memorized. If you ask me, the rogue was nervous. A typical duel with typical fighters. What's the big deal?
Our job is as easy as a cork. We kill anything that moves. And if it doesn't move, we kick it and then kill it. Are there any questions?
Welcome to battle,
shouted the announcer's voice. Our surroundings came into focus, and I couldn't help but whistle in astonishment. The arena had changed. As I had managed to learn, any spectator wishing to see the battle on the visualizer at home with a beer and a blanket simply needed to send his virtual body to the arena's seats. This was done in order to give the combatants a sense that they were being watched. If there weren't enough spectators, the gaps were filled in with NPCs whose purpose it was to simulate a crowded audience. But if there were too many spectators, we were inside a brimming, colossal edifice whose top rows disappeared in the sky above us. I looked over at the announcer's box and saw a constantly growing number that was currently a little over 10 million. Wow. Do people have nothing better to do than to watch a battle inside a game?
Found themselves some gladiators.
May the strongest among you triumph.
Bets?
Plinto asked with a nervous giggle when the system reached the last few seconds of the countdown. As I had also managed to learn, neither team could cross the special line several meters from the fighters until the countdown expired. Otherwise, the system would assign the violators a forfeit.
Why not?
I opened the betting interface and bet 10 million on our victory. I didn't even look at our enemy's chances, since the odds of 1 to 26 for our victory didn't really motivate me.
Fight!
On the other side of the arena, an ordinary hunter with a spotted white black tiger began to walk in our direction. Methodius. Like any decent rogue, Kai Ten went into stealth and was currently rushing to take up his position based on whatever the duo's plan was. That's okay. We've got plans, too. I will try to do as Plinto asked me. The battle's conditions allowed me to take full advantage of my character's specialization in intellect. The shadow shields that appeared around me and Plinto at the very beginning of the fight wanted nothing more than to absorb 2 million points of damage, while I still had 241,000 hit points at level 333. This duo is really much too strong for me, so I'll have to play the role I hate, a shaman healer. On the other hand, this was level 395 Plinto's moment to shine. The important thing is that his nerves calm down and he comes to himself. Otherwise, we'll have a tough time of it.
"Man!"
Methodius yelled, stopping beyond my shadow's range.
"I was asked to relay a message to you. The insolent dog yaps at the tiger so long as the latter is in a cage, but when the tiger is released, the dog makes a puddle and runs to its master."
"How positively philosophical," I muttered. Methodius's self-assurance undermined my confidence in our plan. This duo had encountered Plinto many times and should be familiar with all his tricks. "When you come flying out of the arena," I didn't feel like remaining indebted, "and stumble upon your kitty trembling in the bushes somewhere, simply pet him. Don't do anything else to him. Don't even take his money. Let this defeat be yours personally and not his. Let him continue to imagine he is a great and terrible tiger. If his courage consists of finding 2 griefers to deal with an insolent dog, then I truly sympathize with him who hired you. He sits there, frets, and worries that the kids are about to get it."
"I like you," Methodius smiled. "It'll be fun knocking you out and then hunting you. I heard there's a nice bounty on your head."
"Uh-huh. Well, shall we get to it then? You see, I'd like to warn you, just so you don't waste any more breath needlessly, I'll attack in 5, 4, 3, 2... Come here, Draco. Coming! Maximum acceleration. Kill the enemies. I'm on it! 1. Shield on Draco. To battle! You have been stunned for 60 seconds. Damage taken. You have been blinded for 60 seconds. You cannot summon shadows for another 30 seconds. Your totem has leveled up. Current level 301. Battle completed."
"They died?"
I heard Draco's voice through the fading white film of blindness. "This is an arena. It's just sport," I rushed to assuage the pacifist. "Tactics, strategy, like hell. You summon a level 300 dragon, have him accelerate to his maximum level of acceleration, and then pour fire on everything and everyone. There's not a single tank that'll withstand that, unless he has a healer, of course, and neither the rogue nor the hunter were that."
New private challenge received. Mayan Plinto versus Kai Ten Methodius. The bout will take place in 60 minutes in the private arena. Fighter's level, current.
"Never imagined they would get so pissy," Plinto muttered pensively, patting Draco on the neck. Hello, you scaly badass, you. I'd forgotten about you somehow. You look good, kid. Thank you.
Despite being 5 meters long, Draco was a very flexible and mobile creature. He coiled around Plinto and took him in his... embrace? Coils? Vices? It's hard to find the word for the nightmare that I was currently witnessing.
It's nice to see you, too.
New private challenge received. Mayan Plinto versus Kai Ten Methodius. New private challenge received. New private chat.
It's a good thing that it had occurred to me to limit our bouts to 5 a day. Otherwise, our enemies would simply wear us out. The tactics for this duo turned out to be simple as all hell. Draco would fly up, accelerate to his 6th level of acceleration, and in a few seconds wipe out the hunter and his pet tiger. Then we'd wait around until the Naga appeared. He couldn't stun Plinto due to the Patriarch's tooth, and it made no sense to stun me, since then Kai Ten would be wide open to Plinto, who was at his level and had a shadow shield to boot. Meanwhile, I'd set Draco free as soon as the hunter had been wiped out of harm's way. The last thing I needed was to have my totem sent to respawn.
Mayan!
When it became clear that the duels had ended for the day, Plinto began to express his complaints.
Naturally, I understand that 5 unique items is quite a haul, and that we've just griefed those who are more accustomed to griefing others. That's cool and all. But your damn arena caused us to miss the most important event of the first day of the tournament.
What? I even stuttered, not expecting such a dressing down from Plinto.
And he even has to ask. Lori was performing today. Come on, I still have a recording of it. We need to celebrate.
I kindly request a few minutes of your time.
A goblin in a tuxedo appeared beside us. His voice instantly told us who we were talking to. The arena's announcer had blessed us with his presence.
Under the rules of the tournament, you wagered Late's Stinger as part of the betting pool.
Plinto gave me a surprised look, unsettling me a bit. I'd forgotten to tell him.
A raise was received, and under the rules you yourself set, it must be called. How do you prefer to call the raise? With gold, or with items at their market value?
How much is it? It occurred to me to ask before making my decision. It seems much easier to call using gold than go around looking for
632 million gold,
the goblin deadpanned, staring at us with his hazel blue eyes.
How much?
2 throats hollered in unison. Plinto was no less shocked than I was.
Bayan wagered his castle of the solar wind that you cannot win 10 battles in a row at the status arena. The counting of the bouts begins tomorrow. Will you call his bet? Understanding that this may cause a bit of inconvenience for you,
squeaked the announcer after a short while, as we stood there in shock,
Bayan is prepared to accept your personal castle as a calling bet. Altamita. In that case, the bets will be considered even, and
if Bayan wishes to wager his castle, I interrupted the goblin, trying to calm down. That's his personal erotic problem. My wager has been made. Late's Stinger. There's no mention of evening the bets in the betting pool I set up. If he reckons that the staff is worth an entire castle, that's his business and his wager. If he reckons that I have to add to my initial wager, he is free to go to... Suckertown. Plinto helped me come up with a good destination for buy-in. Precisely, I agreed, and added, I'd also like to point out that we've already fought 5 battles since the wager was made. It's not my problem that Bayan was navel-gazing and counting crows and decided to make his bet only now. He needs to be quicker on his toes. Or do you want to say that that would infringe on some law or rule?
Not at all. This will all be taken into account. Thank you for your explanation.
The goblin backtracked shockingly quickly. He began to backpedal in a fit of bows.
All the best to you, and may you have success in the arena.
What was that? I asked myself aloud. But Plinto decided that the question was not a rhetorical one and required discussion.
The era of dragons is trying to take Altamira from you. The rogue's outrage knew no bounds. It's not enough that they've gobbled up all the other empires on their continent. They're trying to get their dirty paws on ours. This is just insolence.
The hell do they need with Altamira? I asked, puzzled.
The hell?
Plinto thought for several moments, and then fixed me with a serious look and asked,
Do you know your castle inside and out?
What? Plinto didn't bother listening to me, but waved his hand dismissively, as if saying, What's a shaman gonna tell me anyway? He called Anastaria and demanded another emergency meeting. Some mega-epic plot had occurred to the rogue.
And that's why I believe that Bayan's main objective is Altamira. Now, we have to answer the question, why?
Sitting in an armchair with a satisfied look, Plinto reached the end of his theory of what had happened. I shook my head. In my view, the rogue had spent too much time in the game, and was seeing spies, plots, and conspiracies everywhere. Viltrius, I called the goblin, and asked him to tell us about the castle's dark areas. It's better to establish that white is white than constantly fret about the opposite.
The entire territory of the castle is under my control and that of the hobgoblins.
The majordomo confirmed my belief that Altamira was no more than a castle. One that could teleport, but still a castle.
There are no closed areas, secret rooms, corridors, or similar features in Altamira.
There, you see? As old man Freud used to say, sometimes a banana is just a banana. I held up a finger demonstratively, calling the people to a reasonable perception of reality. And yet Stacy's next question to Viltrius, and his subsequent response, forced me to freeze with my mouth agape. Are there any unregistered portals in the castle? Ones that don't lead to anywhere?
Yes, 3 of them. At present, they are inactive and are therefore not included in the castle's reports. Judging by their properties, the first portal will be activated once the castle reaches level 30, the second at level 40, and the third at level 50.
Portals? My initial shock passed, and I fell onto my majordomo with questions. Why am I finding out about this only now?
As I said, they're inactive and weren't included in the daily reports as a result, Viltrius replied, nonplussed. To be honest, The existence of the portals came as a surprise to me as well. They appeared right after the castle reached level 26. Considering that in addition to the portals, the castle also acquired new rooms, allowing spiteful Noom to outfit his workshop, I deemed these new additions as specifics of Ultimida.
On the topic of global conspiracies, Plinto drawled sarcastically as soon as we let Viltrius go, the corporation had never before introduced a castle that could simply teleport. It's too simple and irrational. My heart senses that our mutual acquaintance has his own people among the game's scenario designers. Of course, no one can prove anything, but the fact remains, he knows a lot more about Ultimida than we do.
It's a pretty move with the wager, Stacy agreed. They got the announcer to just kind of mention that Ultimida would be enough to call the raise, and came up with this offer right after we'd trounced a duo that had been considered unbeatable until that moment. Had I a psychological profile of Mayan before the events of the tomb, I wouldn't doubt for a second that, on a wave of success, emotions, and internal sense of justice, he'd take a wager like this. Only Bayan isn't aware that Mayan's changed quite a bit over the last 2 months. I wouldn't say too much, but he's different. Do you understand why Kai Ten and Methodius lost now, Plinto? You think a duo that's seen thousands of battles side by side doesn't know how to deal with an ordinary totem, even one that spits fire? This was all arranged ahead of time with the single goal of getting Mayan to wager Ultimida. To put it simply, the Solar Wind is the second most important castle for the Era of Dragons. Would Bayan really risk it? Please.
In that case, the million-dollar question, how can we level up the castle 3 times within reasonable time constraints?
Plinto looked at me inquisitively.
Mayan?
I reclined wearily in my favorite rocking throne, which the corporation had once gifted me. Yet another unique thing added to the game for the sake of pleasure. However, if I were to follow Plinto's and Stacy's logic, after some millionth rock in my throne, a portal would pop open under my butt, and I would plummet off into some unknown dimension.
Mayan, what? I'm prepared to invest all my winnings in the castle. That's about 300 million. But what'll that give us? Let's imagine that we'll level up the castle and the portal will become active. Who will go inside? We don't have the raid party for this. Shall we hire mercenaries? From Phoenix? Or bow down before Bayan? Insanity! Let's imagine a different situation. Phantoms will start crawling out of the portal. The same ones that had once protected Ultimida when we first appeared at its walls. Who will defend the castle? Me? Plinto? Vemus and his pair of Tauren?
Stacy, did you already draft your will?
Plinto suddenly asked, turning to the girl.
The forecast has a high probability of a meteor shower today.
My wife stared at the rogue in puzzlement for several moments, and then grinned broadly.
Mayan is worried about his estate? Is that what you're talking about?
What else? You're a bad influence on him. Before you know it, our shaman will start using his head, thinking and asking inconvenient questions. The horror!
I'm of the mind that it doesn't make sense to rush the castle right now. Stacy
brought the conversation back to the topic at hand.
I'd leave it alone entirely, actually. If a new level grants something to the castle, we had better be prepared for it. Being at a state of war with the entire continent while pursuing these investigations at the same time is too much of a luxury. Now, who wants dinner?
I pass. Plinto shook his head negatively. It's time to take a bath and go to sleep. We'll have to prove to everyone tomorrow that today's victories were earned, not granted. And I hope you two do the same. Get some rest. If Mayan pulls off his plan with the fog, we'll have a hell of a day ahead of us.
Chapter 13 The Pryke Copper Mine.
Welcome to battle!
Unlike in the private arena, there weren't many spectators in the 2-versus-2 arena for the round of 32,768. As far as I could tell, there weren't any players at all. The noise here was being generated by an NPC audience, which cheered as much for us as for our opponents, a duo of rogues.
May the strongest among you triumph!
As per custom, I shielded us, and we began awaiting our enemy's attacks, continuing our discussion of our upcoming bouts as we did so. It didn't matter whether yesterday's bouts had been rigged or not. Our opponents had bet unique items, and the jackpot had grown a lot in the process. Even though Silkador and Chican had wagered a mysterious, yet not very useful, level 100 ritual dagger, Methodius and Kaiten's wager was so immense that I wanted to hop in the arena and defeat my own self to get my hands on it. When Stacy noticed the seemingly ordinary breastplate, or rather, one-third of a breastplate, she pressed me up against the wall and demanded I take it out of public circulation. In some sense, I understood her. It's difficult to risk losing an item from the luminous set. I even tried to sneak this luminous breastplate fragment, 1 of 3, out of the pool, but the arena manager caught me and warned me that the penalty would be a forced forfeit, and a loss of something more valuable than mere reputation. He was referring to status. I'd be marked as a player who didn't keep his word. After all, I had called the players a bunch of hapless crabs, and Plinto and I still had to answer for my words. Thus, it wasn't mere reputation amid the NPCs that was at stake, but status with the other players. It was unclear whether Methodius and Kaiten had wagered this item on purpose, or whether they merely wanted to show off what they had at their disposal. However, the end effect was that all the other players began to compete among each other for the chance to be the first to slaughter us. Initially, our challengers had been betting only simple and weak items. They were unique and all, but they were also low-level, or largely useless. For example, a flower pot for a florist that allowed the florist in question to forget about having to water the plants or repot them. The pot magically provided the perfect growing environment for any plant, allowing it to reach its greatest beauty. I wouldn't dispute the idea that this item was, indeed, a great wonder, yet who needed it? You could count the number of florists in Barleona on one hand, and, given the item's restrictions, there were even fewer ordinary people who could even use this item if they wanted to. In a word, this bet was unique and absolutely useless, which the system instantly established on its own and sent the duo that had bet it to the very back of the Kill Plinto and Mayan queue. And yet, any betting party was always free to change its bet, and now it seemed like they had just been waiting for the opportunity. When I entered the game, the first place in the queue for the private arena was held by a duo that had bet a small jewelry box, large enough to hold a few rings. No more. The system had appraised this box so highly that over the next few hours only places 2 through 5 changed, while the first place remained the same. Our old friends Methodius and Kai Ten were in 4th place. Stacy cursed when she saw this. 4th place, according to her, was the best position to gain maximum profit from the betting pool. This duo was so confident in itself as well as us, it's worth pointing out, that they allowed 3 duos to step ahead of them in the queue. They wanted to maximize their final winnings. Why 4th and not 5th? So as not to risk some random rich kid beating their wager. These kids were playing smart.
"By the way, man," Plinto smirked when the rogue duo fell on him with their knives and daggers. "I think we've gotten distracted. We've got a fight on our hands here. Seems like..."
"That's true. Let me help you out with that," I replied amicably, and one of the rogues went flying into bits and pieces. Only a paladin could survive 2 heavy battle shadows at once.
"You have completed the round of 2048 of the 2 versus 2 arena.
We encountered no problems in the ordinary arena. Druids, death knights, warriors, paladins with their reflection and bubbles, hunters, mages, rogues. The combinations were diverse, but the bouts ended the same way. Our opponents played the roles of balloons, and we, the needles. They'd go flying in little pieces across the entire arena. As soon as we left the arena, the system informed us of another challenge.
New challenge received. Mayan Plinto versus Calatea Ants in the Pansa. The bout will take place in 60 minutes in the arena. Scale, level 30.
Drawled Plinto, reading the notification. "Mayan, are you aware that we're missing the entire tournament because of this additional arena you set up? There are exciting events underway over there somewhere, and meanwhile, we're over here, toiling away in this arena you've created, and all the headaches that come with it."
"What are you talking about?" I asked, surprised.
"I'm talking about how until I hit level 50, I have nothing, not a single skill or power. I would have to rely entirely on my HP pool to survive, and, I'm a rogue."
"What? Oh, no!"
I looked at my own stats and barely suppressed my outrage.
"All of my shadows require at least level 50, too. What's the deal here?"
"The deal is that players who are just starting out and are really low level can't play for Shadow. You know who caused this? Our lovely singer. Lori caused some kind of conflagration in her arboretum, and the corporation began changing the mechanics. To be honest, I figured that the changes would only affect starting players, but damn, what about your spirits?"
"Nope, unavailable. They're locked. I'm at hatred status with everyone, remember?"
"So, we won't have any shields or healing. All right, we'll take that as a given. There's always your totem and our racial abilities. It'd be nice to know who the hell Calatea and Ants in the Pansa are."
"They're shamans," I said sadly. "Two harbingers. They know who my totem is and have no doubt figured out how they'll neutralize him. Everyone must have seen yesterday's bouts by now. By the way, those two will be able to blink around, like I used to. And who the hell knows whether blink is allowed in the arena or not? After all, they can only blink on their continent, but we're in...
Astrum brought its obelisk, too, so they will be able to blink. That's the first thing. The second thing is that the arena is neutral territory as far as the continents are concerned, and any ability available at your home territory will be available here. Fun times, eh?
You could say that again.
All right. Let's go to the arena. We have an hour to figure out how we're supposed to win this one. I'm not about to forfeit without a fight.
Design Mode welcomed me with a terrifying emptiness. That is, not Design Mode itself. That was full of various items I had made, but rather the absolute darkness of Design Mode in which I had worked with the spirits and later with the shadows. As hard as I tried to summon a single shadow or spirit, nothing worked, and all the embodiments I'd made earlier didn't work. They didn't have enough life. The shaman has three hands. Your access to the leprosarium is blocked. Your access to the astral plane is blocked. Tumbling out of yet another trance, I had nothing left to do but curse. Nothing worked. I couldn't wield either the spirits or the shadows at level 30. Despairing, I tried to do something with the supreme spirits or the brethren directly, but encountered no success. The programmers had earned their keep. Everything was blocked. What to do? For the first time in a long time, I didn't have any idea for how to get myself out of this situation. Damn it! I wish I could blow them all up with Armageddon and... Hold on. I opened Design Mode and hesitated. I was so afraid that my idea might not work that I began to do everything with the patience and diligence of a sapper. It seemed as if any inaccurate movement, gesture, or even breath might spoil the final result. When I opened my eyes, I saw Plinto blinking before me. Yes! I did it! I know how we can beat Anson the Panza and Calatea. The important thing was to draw them in until they stood near me. Plinto! I have an idea. We can win, but I need to run over to Altamita really quickly. I explained my plan to the rogue and received another portion of wry laughter in response.
You know, Mayan, even if they force us to fight level 400 players while scaling us down to level 1, I suppose I'll have to join you and fight alongside. Go on and run to the bank. We have very little time.
Welcome to battle! May the strongest among you triumph!
Two women stood facing us at the other end of the arena. The founder and chief ideologue of the shaman class, an enormous green orc, and her brightest student, the hope and light of the shamanic movement, the apostate Anson the Panza, in the form of an ordinary girl. Why apostate? Because she had fled our continent in search of a better life and a better game for herself. Well, good luck to them both. I backed up slowly, watching our opponents approach. Plinto retreated alongside me. At level 30, he didn't even have stealth. The good thing was that the harbingers weren't blinking. Either the arena's coordinate grid was unavailable to them, or the penalty for using blink was too great. Or perhaps they wanted us to savor our helplessness before landing the killing blow. Suddenly, the shaman's totems appeared beside them. Bussy, a panther as black as tar, and... I even shook my head from shock. A tarantula. Calatea's totem was a tarantula. A huge spider, 1.5 meters tall.
"I bet that monster can spit some kind of web thing," muttered Plinto. "They might paralyze your Draco and kill him."
"They might," I agreed, still backing up to the wall.
"Boys, where are you going?"
Before I could blink, the harbingers vanished from sight, and their voices sounded behind us. I spun around to find Calatea's green mug scowling in my face, 2 steps in front of me.
"It's pretty fun, fighting without the powers we're all used to, isn't it? You know what's really odd? Is that my premonition is telling me to finish this fight as quickly as I can. It's as if you have even the slightest chance of winning. I like the mere idea of it. So I'll give you a chance. Just one. You get the first attack, Shaman. You have 5 seconds.
"You know, Mayan, I like the way this orc broad thinks," smiled Plinto, unsheathing his knives. "If you have something up your sleeve, now's the time. As I understand it, we won't get a second chance. So, I'll leave you to be and go for a nice stroll, I think."
Oh, how I adore the overconfident. Were our places reversed, Plinto and I would have already been in the nearest tavern, having a drink, in mourning of all the items we'd missed out on. But, as it stood, we were facing your ordinary, overconfident, high-level player who had no actual experience with PvP. This couple thought they had our number. Silly of them. Plinto turned and broke into a sprint, putting distance between us as if he were on fire. Calatea frowned with consternation, unable to understand exactly what was happening. She exchanged glances with Ants in the Pantsa, began to raise her arm in order to point at the rogue, and that was when design mode yanked me out of the surrounding world. Darkness enveloped me. Darkness and 200 pendants just waiting for their moment to shine. And I do mean shine. My earlier trials with the pendants had taken me to Erebus, but they had also taught me a very important lesson. If you want to blow something up, you have to create a masterpiece first. In my case, 100 masterpieces. In Ultimita, I had picked up all the ingredients I needed to craft the items, and the only thing left now was to combine them with their projections. There followed an immense explosion. And yet, there was no notification about our victory. As soon as all the motes of light had danced their scripted dance and their timer had expired, dispelling the blindness debuff, I grabbed my staff and rushed in the direction of where Calatea and Ants in the Pantsa were supposed to be. I couldn't allow them to recover. When my perception of the surrounding world had passed from 2 dimensions to 3, and I began not only to see the objects around me, but perceive my own position relative to them, a wave of surprise washed over me. The explosion had not killed Calatea. The shaman was still alive. In any case, that part of her that peeked out of the black crater in the wall was still alive. Screams, curses, groans, and calls for help sounded all around me, but I didn't pay the collateral casualties any attention. Instead, I was fixated on a strange quirk of the arena that my explosion had revealed. The explosion had destroyed a part of the wall, scattering stone blocks all over the arena,
destroyed a part of the player spectators who had found themselves in its blast radius, and, what surprised me most of all, hurled Calatea into the opening that had been behind the wall. There wasn't anything there, and now Calatea's leg and arm were helplessly jerking side to side against an absolutely black background. It was these movements that made me conclude that the shaman was alive and not dead. She'd merely gotten a little stuck in that place, which physically didn't exist in the game. She'd effectively clipped through the arena. The system spent a long time thinking about the situation. About a minute. During this interval, the stun that Plinto had managed to cast on the still-surviving ants in the Pansa managed to expire as well. The explosion had thrown her not into the wall, but into the center of the arena. So if the shaman had been killed, it wasn't too violently. The good news was as follows. Bussy had been buried by rocks, completely freeing us from the threat of her claws and fangs. The panther was whimpering, trying to climb out of the pile, but it was beyond her. Unwilling to allow himself the luxury of a revived opponent, Plinto turned into his vampire form and froze the girl just in case. Even if this was only for a minute, it would afford enough time to put the daggers to use and send the shaman to respawn. When it became clear that we would be victorious, the system decided to have mercy on our opponents. "One of the combatants has left the arena, and her team has been disqualified. Mayan and Plinto are victorious. New challenge received." Ants in the Pansa managed to give me a shocked, stunned look before my surroundings began to shimmer. Plinto and I found ourselves at a renewed, empty arena, which bore no trace of the cataclysm that had just occurred. The system had generously granted us 15 minutes to recover our powers and come to our senses.
"How many more of those do you have?"
Plinto collapsed to the sand wearily. As brief as the first battle had been, its pressure was evident not in Plinto alone. I was shaking and shivering inside, as if I'd just overdosed on adrenaline. I wanted to jump and skip, even though there wasn't any buff on me. If we're talking about explosions of similar magnitude, then enough for another 5, 6 bouts? There's lots of pendant orders.
"Beg your pardon,"
the arena announcer appeared beside us.
"I must adjust the arena rules. You can't prohibit powers in the arena,"
I interrupted the goblin. "Facing professional killers without a single means of defending ourselves? Is that within the rules, too?"
"You didn't let me finish,"
the announcer whimpered.
"From now on, there shall be no bouts below level 50, and your powers will be available to you. But we must limit your use of your creative ecstasy in battle. There is no defense against it, so it would be unfair to permit it. It's enough if you sign an agreement about non-use and..."
"Is this the corporation's official position?" Something odd struck me about the announcer's speech. "I am officially forbidden from using anything permitted under the rules?"
"No, not at all."
The goblin even started back.
"This is merely a recommendation, not a position. The arena is a place where the free citizens can demonstrate their mastery of their weapons. Who would agree to a battle knowing ahead of time that he would lose? It's unprofessional. For that reason..."
"Rivada Aguiloris!"
Plinto suddenly barked some incomprehensible gibberish and glared inquisitively at the goblin.
The goblin faded from dark green to a very light green, bordering on white, paling from fear. The announcer's arms and legs began to tremble in fear, and he whispered in a weak, terrified voice,
"Rivarda! Rico!"
"What were the odds?"
Plinto continued to surprise me.
27 to 1,
the goblin replied with a stutter.
"Who hired you?"
"Huh?"
"I repeat, who hired you?"
Plinto produced some kind of round object and demonstrated it to the goblin. Now the announcer became entirely white, like an albino. A very scary sight. An albino goblin, let me assure you. This terrifying creature collapsed on his knees and howled,
"Please, I beg you, don't kill me. They forced me. Too many terrifying individuals have bet on you losing in the fourth round. Please, do not kill me."
"Your life is in my hands," Plinto growled bloodthirstily, the way only he could. "I need a name."
"Sig Crook Nose."
The announcer collapsed entirely and froze, as if Plinto was the great god of death. Although, I suppose there's much I still don't know about Plinto, so he could well be.
"Get out of here,"
the rogue barked, and the goblin vanished like the wind.
So? I hiked my eyebrow so high that Plinto was caught off guard.
"Have you considered a career on the stage? What mimicry? What emotion? Damn it all, the shadowy clans are playing against us. I noticed last time that there was something off about that goblin, so that's what it was. Once upon a time, during my youth, I tried to set myself up in the Barleona underworld. That's where this code phrase came from, Rivada Agaloris. The corporation ripped it off from an ancient bestseller. When a player earns the right to speak this phrase, an NPC that he addresses must answer. That's how you can identify the thieves' guilds. Now it turns out that someone really wants us to lose the fourth bout. Or can even guess who has enough money to pique Sig's curiosity."
"Who's that?"
"Well, if you want the short version, one of the wealthiest people of our continent. His clan is among the top 10. Several castles, a well-developed infrastructure, lots of fighters. In general, he's an ordinary citizen. If it weren't for one but, his entire business is focused on thievery, fraud, killing NPCs, and keeping players locked in respawn areas. They say that in the real world, he does pretty much the same thing. No one knows anything for certain, however."
"I don't really understand. What kind of threat does he pose to us?"
"The threat that the fourth bout, if you checked our schedule, is scheduled for 3 p.m., 2 hours after the third bout. We won't be able to spend that entire time in the arena, and we'll have to step out to the city, where someone will be waiting for us. Some kind of kerfuffle will occur, enraging the local guardian, the guards, whoever. And if we're in jail and can't show up to the fourth bout, we'll be disqualified, and that will be that. Be sure to write, and sweet dreams."
"So why should we go out?" I asked, baffled.
"Well, now it's clear that we shouldn't. But this very moment, that goblin is rushing to his boss to notify him of what happened. They'll cook up some other ruse. You think this is their first time? So, don't relax and go set up your shadows. We have a date with a new set of victims in 5 minutes. These guys will be at level 200. I mean, kids these days. Like, that'll help them. We dealt with our second and third duo of opponents without any problems. The battle would start. I'd cast shields on Plinto and myself, and turn into a dragon, while my partner cast blindness on one of the enemies. Then I'd flit over to the other and thunderclap him into paralysis, and then use 4 battle shadows to blow everyone out of the arena. I'm still not sure what the duos of druids and death knights were trying to prove, or what they had hoped would happen. Did they think we wouldn't use our entire arsenal? Silly rabbits. Everyone was waiting for the 4th bout. That would decide the fate of Bayan's castle and Late's stinger. In fact, it'd decide the fate of the entire arena. My premonition told me that if we won this one, no one else would even bother. We were about to fight the best of the best.
"Welcome to battle! May the strongest among you triumph!"
Plinto and Kaiten vanished into stealth at the same time, darting off to take up their positions as per the plans. The audience hollered. The rogues hadn't vanished for the spectators, merely become semi-transparent. Due to the restrictions, any contact with the outside world in the arena was limited, and exiting the game, even for a moment, was deemed a defeat. So the corporation didn't risk anything, allowing the spectators to enjoy the beauty and horror of the tactics used in battle. As Plinto pointed out, the players would study the combat footage exhaustively, and there were even specialized simulators which allowed them to face any opponent in the database. The players approached the task of killing each other extremely diligently, and the corporation did its utmost to help them by offering any service it could. For money, naturally. Our opponents had once again chosen to fight us without limitations. On the one hand, this was bad, due to the 70-level gap between me and the duo. On the other hand, thanks to the momentary pause between the 3rd and 4th bouts, I had finally found the time to study the shadows available at level 333, and I had used this time to my utmost. The Shadow Shaman class turned out to be a lot of fun. Figuring that only experienced players would play this class, the devs didn't bother assigning level caps to the shadows. As soon as a shaman reaches level 50, every possible shadow becomes available to him, with the strength of the summon determined entirely by the character's intellect. If memory serves, Stacy mentioned that most players limited themselves to 8 abilities, assigning them to the quick spell slots. I wouldn't argue. I did the same thing back in my hunter days. And yet, reality was utterly different at the moment, and using shadows would lead to immediate defeat, as there was nothing scaling down the level difference between us. So, before the bout, I sat down right in the center of the arena and began to craft. And not jewelry, which would have been logical. I began to craft shadows. Once upon a time, the system had generously granted me the opportunity to craft hybrid spirits. They turned out weaker than the originals, and yet they were also more versatile. For example, when healing an ally, I could also cast a shield on him, which could protect him from a subsequent attack, which, formally speaking, meant that I could choose between one large dose of healing and a smaller one with a shield. This seemed all the same at best, but there were nuances involved too, or, as I like to say, undocumented features. And these
were what I wanted to find. The shaman has three hands. A wave of shadows emanated from my hands and sank into the arena's sand. The first thing I needed to do was to protect myself from Kai Ten and his tiger. Traps wouldn't help.